Welcome to the Performance Baseball Podcast,
talking about youth baseball coaching and player development.
Our goal is to equip coaches and parents to win on and off the field.
We are your hosts, Adam Young
and Josh Riley.
Like, subscribe, and comment, and if you ask a question in the comments, we'll do our best to answer it.
Now, let's go to the show.
All right, welcome back.
Welcome back. Hey, what's going on?
Oh, not too much. First off, my apologies to our dozens of listeners, to our hordes of listeners.
Yes.
We missed a week, and it's kind of on me. My apologies.
It's all good. It's all good. Life happens. Yeah, what's going on in your world?
Yeah, so we are celebrating at my church our 75th anniversary.
75 years?
75 years of official operation. So the church as it is currently organized was founded in 1950 out of an elementary school. Kind of a classic story on that front. But this church can actually date its history all the way back to the land run in 1889.
Oh my gosh.
So the original Sunny Lane Methodist Church, which was just called Sunny Lane Church, was erected the week after the land run in April 22nd, 1889.
Wow. What a history.
And they built their first building on June 20 something, 1889.
That's insane.
And the original foundation is still visible next to Sunny Lane Cemetery, and we hold our Easter sunrise services there every year.
Wow.
Rain or shine, wind or hail, snow or whatever.
Wow.
We are out there, and we stand like where that old building was, and you can still make out the outline of
where's the original building at? Do you know the cross streets? Where is it at?
Yeah, it's at 29th, just south of 29th on Sunny Lane Road.
Oh wow, okay,
about a half mile south of 29th Street.
That's south crazy. 29th Street. So how are you guys celebrating it? What's going on with the 75th?
Oh man, so we've got one of our denominational leaders coming. He's basically in charge of Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to preach for us, and his name is Derek, and our district superintendent is coming and going to bring a word. We've got old pastors coming in from out of town.
Wow.
And
okay.
We had a dinner on Wednesday where I had produced like this hour long video of our history.
Wow.
That we showed, and it was pretty awesome. And
so that's gobbled up all your editing time right there.
Exactly. Yes. It has consumed my time.
Absolutely.
So, yes. I don't know. Are you able to see like how many fans we have or like how many listeners we have? I was curious about this the other day. Like, what are our stats? Because we haven't really looked.
I do. I track it from time to time. I don't really nuzzle in on it too much.
Like, I would be curious to know.
Like, all time for season one all the way through, we're over 800 listens.
800? So hundreds of listeners?
Over 800 listens for every episode, just total listeners. Our most popular, we'll just go through it. Our most popular episode right now is actually Strengthening the Mind, Conquering Performance Anxiety with Tanner Lawrence.
Yeah.
105 listens. Yeah.
That's a classic.
Yep. Episode 5. So if you go back, Strengthening the Mind, Conquering Performance Anxiety with Tanner Lawrence.
And we're going to get
That's our most listened one, quickly followed by Developing the Next Level with Coach Joe Haddix, which is the Moore head coach. So
yeah.
Those are our two top listened episodes.
I'm surprised the one with our Astros scout wasn't up there a little higher. But
I know. I have no idea why that isn't, but I mean, it's still strong. I mean, still over 50. 50, 60 listens. So,
that's awesome.
If you haven't been with us, I mean, man, we got rock and roll dating back. Our trailer, our first episode launched February 28th of this year. So, I mean, we are new. We're new to podcasting. So
yeah, we are.
We're still trying to get our footprint out there.
I was thinking the other day, too, like maybe getting an email, like a podcast email going. If people wanted to send us questions or comments or
sure.
ideas, show ideas by email. What do you think about that? Like performancepod@gmail.com or something like that?
We just have to see if it's available. But
okay, I'm going to look right now.
We'll post it in the next episode. We'll put it up and running. Or even, heck, we'll just put it in the show notes once we post this.
Yeah,
so exactly. once we find the email address that's viable for it, you could definitely just send us a message. We'll post it in the show notes once this episode posts.
You can listen to me create an account on Google
as we fly right now.
This is riveting podcasting.
It's true. So
my first name is Performance. My last name is Baseball.
Yes.
I'll go ahead and put my birthday in. Y'all don't need to know my birthday
though. Oh man,
it is June 16th, but I'm not telling you the year because I'm self-conscious about it.
Oh, so, gotcha. Gotcha.
Okay, it's giving me a couple of, like, let's try this, performancepod@gmail.com. That username is taken!
Wow.
Wow, I'm shocked. Okay, all right, we'll figure it out.
We'll dabble with it. We'll post in the show notes.
Performancepod. Who else is using
Performancepod?
What if we go, let's try PBpod. PBpod. Nope. It's got to be longer. We need some numbers.
We'll track it down.
How about 820 for our address? pbpod820@gmail.com. There you go.
Did that work?
That worked.
All right. Okay. There it is.
820 Irish Lane comes through.
There we go.
So if you want to email the show, you just listen to live creation of a Gmail account.
There we go.
pbpod820@gmail.com.
We'll post in the show notes if you have any ideas, if you want to be a guest, if you want to call in. All that stuff. Yeah. We'll get to that point.
Heck yeah.
But anywho.
I had one more question for you.
Shoot. Go for
are
it.
Are you able to see where our listeners reside, like where they're listening from? Are you
so this is a funny. Info? So this is a funny thing because it does. It does give you a general vicinity, which is always fascinating. So the automatic is like...
So who is the furthest away that's listening to this podcast?
So the furthest away, so like it says all cities last 30 days. The furthest away, so I mean, I see Oklahoma City, I see Tulsa, Guthrie, I see Glassboro, which I don't know, Glassboro?
Like Scotland?
I guess so. Fontana, which is in California, Los Angeles, Edmond, which is where we're at, Houston, Corona, which I'm assuming that's California, back where I'm kind of from.
How do you spell Glassboro?
Glass and then B-O-R-O.
New Jersey?
I guess so.
I'm seeing New Jersey.
Atlanta, Anaheim, Calgary, Canada.
Hey, all right.
Westchester, Canada. Yeah. Dover, Seattle. So
wow,
Saskatoon.
That's crazy.
Canada. So I mean, we do have listens. That's all. That's the last 30 days. Let's see the.
Hey,
furthest.
if you think you're the furthest away, email our new Gmail. What was it? pbpod820
at gmail.com. Yeah, looking at it, man, we have Ottawa.
That's awesome.
We have people all over. It's not just local.
Oh, Canada.
We have some UK, City of Westminster.
Hey,
says the UK, France. Yeah. And there's multiple listens from that area.
That's so cool.
There's multiple listens.
Well, if you're from any of those areas, give us a shout out. Tell us why you're listening.
Absolutely.
to a little baseball podcast from Edmond, Oklahoma.
Absolutely.
And tell us what you want to hear about, because we'll do our best to get future episodes matching up with what you want
to
hear.
I just went to the top 5 cities in the all time.
Yeah.
Number 1 is Edmond, which is where we're at. Oklahoma City, which is obviously centered around Edmond.
Right.
The number 3 is Melbourne, Australia.
Yeah, Australia.
Australia, 29 listened. That's the third most listened.
That's amazing.
Area. And now, then Australia, Tulsa, and then Tulsa, and then Calgary.
That's awesome. So Australia, that's random. I heard know who it was. There was a guy from Australia on the ABCA podcast, I think, a while back, trying to get Australian national baseball.
Yeah.
Up on the stage, like up onto a higher level.
Yeah. Of competition. It's a really good league. I had some fellow teammates that played down in Australia for a while. They played in the Australian Professional League.
That's awesome.
It's cool. I can't believe that's the number three top city.
That's amazing.
So Edmond, Oklahoma City, and then Melbourne. It's ahead of Tulsa.
That's incredible.
It's in front of Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Way to go, Melbourne.
Well done. It's not just one-off listens. Like, it's dozens of listens. All right.
Aussie. Oi, oi, oi.
Oh, man. Well, awesome, guys.
All right. pbpod820@gmail.com. Shoot us an email.
Yes.
Give us a shout.
Yes.
And we look forward to hearing from you.
Yeah, man.
All right. So, up with you? You've still got the crud, man.
Dude, it's so of all times, so me and my wife are doing an Ironman race this coming weekend. Well, yeah. not like tomorrow, so we record on Fridays.
We're
heading to Waco. Yeah.
I saw your Instagram
Bike ride, yeah. Yeah, so we leave a week from today. So, and of course, all this crap that's been going around, I'm like struggling with bronchitis right now. So I'm wheezing. A time. So trying to kick that before we head down there.
That sucks.
Yeah, it's all good. So if you hear me start coughing, that's just a little bit of shortness of breath right there. Yeah, but anyways, but things are going good. Team is finally ramping back up this weekend. We've been off for the past couple weeks, so we'll have a tournament supposed to be centered in Midwest City, but we actually got scheduled in Dibble, of all things, which is like an hour south, which I don't know why we're down there. But anywho, we're finally playing.
Cool.
Exciting stuff.
Yeah, we're playing in Chickasha this weekend.
Nice.
11U/12U tournament. 21 teams.
Wow.
Registered for this one.
That'd be good stuff right there.
Big one.
Yeah, for sure.
Haven't done one that big before, so should be fun.
Absolutely.
So.
All right. So, you ready to get into the meat and bones right now? Meat and potatoes of it? So,
I think the bronchitis, the lack of oxygen to
it's
your...
True. It's true, man. I'm on all the stuff right now. All the stuff right now. But
we got to talk about success first,
yep,
I think.
That is it. Let's talk all about success.
It's time to talk about success. Woo!
All right.
So today, if you've been following along, we've been going through John Wooden's course, The Pyramid of Success. We've been breaking down all that pyramid last week, past couple weeks. We've been breaking down the building blocks. We're talking about cooperation.
So let's see, the language under cooperation in the Pyramid of Success is: with all levels of your coworkers, you want to listen if you want to be heard. So listen first if you want to be heard. Be interested in finding the best way, not in having your own way.
That's deep.
That's good. You know, I think about it from a coach's perspective, I am always looking for that next piece of information that could help me with practice planning or help me with game planning or help me with how to train our infielders or how to train our outfielders or whatever it might be. And so we always want to be listening and keep our ears open. But I think the same goes for if you are trying to manage a team. Parents are part of that process, and being willing to listen to parents and keep that door open, keep those feedback loops open. It takes some work. It takes some time. But I think it's really important if you want to keep your teams together over time. You've got to be willing to listen. I have run into that in the past where I thought I was hearing and thought I was listening, but didn't, read between the lines on some things that were said to me. And, I wish I would have asked better questions. I think listening is a really important first step as a leader.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this goes along both ways, though. Like, to be successful is kind of building in the seriousness of this for your players too. So make sure that your players are listening as well. I think the biggest thing is like just adapting or just like growing respect amongst the group. If you could listen to whoever's talking. So if a player's talking, everyone needs to listen in. If there's a coach that's talking, everyone needs to listen in.
Yeah.
And that's really the biggest thing, to make sure that the whole team is on the same page.
Yeah. We were struggling with that last night, with our younger boys. They were full of energy and having,
yeah.
I appreciate that they were having fun with each other. But then once it was time to really start practice, they were struggling to kind of rein it in.
Yes.
And I was like, okay, we got to run laps. You're not listening to me. You're not responding. So
yeah.
We get some of those wiggles out.
Yes,
so
it's
to speak,
true.
And, they ran a couple laps and then they were ready to get to work and we had a good practice. But yeah, listening from a player's perspective is really important.
Yeah, and the last little bit of that definition, be interested in finding the best way and not having your own way. So like just goes along the lines of just like making sure that we all hone in on the same goal. We're making sure that we're all working towards the same, you know, the same result. It's not my way or the highway. It's a group focus. Obviously the coaches are going to have their way, you know, like there's a way of getting things done, but we have to make sure that we're all pushing towards the best way.
I think of this, I think of, one particular player that I've been working with just in calling pitches and working on command and location and what we want to throw in different counts. And there have been times when I called for a specific pitch in a game and he threw something else, right?
Mm-hmm.
And like, okay, shake me off once or twice. That's
sure.
Fine. I get it. If you feel more confident in a pitch, but that's not what this was. This was, this player kind of wanting to do whatever they wanted. And it, this has happened with more than one player.
Yeah.
And you have to have then that conversation of like, hey, listen, I'm calling for that pitch in that situation for a specific reason, not just for the heck of it. And when you throw something different, now that changes the game plan moving forward. And
yeah.
And so I really need you as the player to listen and not just do it your way or do it the way that you want, but to work with your coaches, work with your catcher,
yes.
To throw the pitch that we want in that moment.
Oh, 100%, 100%. And that just, I mean, that's just the definition of cooperation. Make sure everyone's on the same page. Make sure every single person's on the same page.
Yeah. And as a player, making sure that you're listening, not just to your coaches, but to your other teammates as well.
Absolutely.
We talk all the time about like, when you get back to the dugout, if you've struck out or if you've made it all the way around the bases, tell your teammates what you're seeing.
Yeah.
And as a teammate, make sure that you are listening.
Yes.
To those, like work together.
Yeah.
To tell them, hey, the ump is calling those outside pitches.
Yeah.
Or hey, he's not calling the outside pitches. Or watch out, he's got a really tough high fastball. Or a tough changeup that drops inside, or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
Communicate.
Or even just committing to, if coach throws down a bunt sign, you know, just committing to it, cooperate with it, because there's a strategy behind it. You know, commit to laying down a really good bunt to advance a runner or score a run or whatever it is.
Team first mentality.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. So, yeah, today all about cooperation. Follow along. Next episode, we're going to be talking about the next building block, which is enthusiasm.
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 That's one of my favorites. I feel like enthusiasm is one of my strong suits.
Yeah, and there's a reason it's down there on the foundation. I mean, enthusiasm is a huge thing.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll look forward to talking more about enthusiasm next.
All
next
right.
Go around.
Let's get on to the next segment.
Chalk Talk.
Chalk Talk, baby.
Chalk Talk.
Yes.
All right.
All right. So my team hasn't played a whole lot the last couple weeks. Do you have any successes? I have had some, but if you have anything from your last weekend that you played.
So I don't have, we haven't played a tournament, with my older boys in 2 weeks. So we didn't play last weekend, but my younger boys, we played a tournament and we were playing a league game on Monday, and there was one moment that stood out in my mind.
Yeah.
Of just, again, trying to help our runners understand how to get a good secondary lead at third base and how to be aggressive with that, not overly aggressive, but they're still learning it, right? They're still learning how to get a short primary and get a running secondary. And one of my younger boys got caught in a rundown at third base.
At third, between third and home?
Between third and home.
Oh, man.
Which, you know, like, usually if that catcher just up and tosses that ball over their head, I just want you taken off for home, which is what happened. But the player then hesitated.
Oh, and, my gosh. And instead of just putting his head down and running.
Yeah, and just got kind of caught in no man's land. So we were working on rundowns last night, actually, with both teams, and it was a good review. But we get them lined up, and I start with just making sure that the ball is out and away from the body.
Mm-hmm.
I teach no pump fakes. I don't know about
absolutely,
you.
Absolutely no pump fakes.
Yeah.
It is scary when someone's running at you and pump faking. You have no idea when the ball's being thrown.
Yeah, and make sure that ball is out. Like, you don't want to hide the ball in the glove when you're running at the runner. And you know, it's a sprint at that runner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not going to lightly jog.
Yeah.
We want, if all else fails, we want to try and get that runner going back towards third. We would
absolutely
rather get the out going towards third,
yeah,
not home. And I tell my older boys, now my younger boys are still learning, so I haven't put this stipulation on them yet. But for my older boys, I'm like, it should take you two throws.
Yep, it should.
No more than two throws.
Yep. Yeah, less than three
for
sure.
How else do you teach rundowns?
Yeah, I mean, less than, you know, two throws or less. Make sure the ball is out and shown, no pump fakes. I teach the guy that's receiving the ball, have their hands up, give a target,
yep,
and call for ball when they want the ball to be tossed or thrown to them. Making sure that we're closing gaps.
Oh, that's interesting. So you have the receiver say ball, ball, ball.
Yep, yep,
okay,
ball when they want it.
That's a good idea.
So instead of,
I haven't done that.
So you expect the throw. So as soon as they realize that that runner's committed to the next base,
yeah,
and they have a play, they yell for ball. Meanwhile, the guy that's receiving the ball is now closing the gap, meaning
right,
like working their
right
way closer to the base runner. Make sure they don't overrun the base runner, because then they'll miss the tag.
Right.
Keep them on the previous two-thirds of the baseline, so not getting closer to the – trying to keep them towards the previous bag.
We don't want to throw it over the runner's head. You want to work either inside,
yeah,
or outside.
Yep.
Call
for
the baseline.
Ball. Yeah, call for ball, peel off arm side. So if you flip the ball, peel off arm side, and then funnel into the next station, you know, the next,
yeah,
base. But that's kind of me in a nutshell. Do you teach anything different?
No, that's all pretty much right. I hadn't taught the peel off arm side. So if you end up on the inside of the baseline, then do you have them cross the baseline to peel
no,
off?
No, they'll just funnel in. I just like saying arm side, the majority of people are righties, but,
yeah,
peel off arm,
yeah,
side, just so you don't smack into each other if it's a quick, so you don't collide.
Right.
So
right. And you don't want to start inside the baseline and throw across,
yes,
to the outside,
yep,
of the baseline.
Because,
yep,
if you're
make
peeling
sure
off
you're
arm side,
your
ball is going to be on the inside of the baseline. So
I do have, like, whoever is throwing the ball, whoever's got the ball, to yell inside, inside, or outside, outside.
Yeah, gotcha.
So I have them do,
yeah,
that too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Again, going back to communication.
It's true, man.
Cooperation.
Absolutely.
So,
absolutely. Well, that's awesome, man. Like,
yeah. Anything
sometimes
on it's what about on the base running side of things? What do you teach in terms of how to get out of that pickle?
Man, I mean, it's honestly just all feel.
Mm-hmm.
As base runners, I mean, obviously, just try to make it to a bag.
The main thing I was teaching last night was like, hey, don't immediately turn your back.
Yeah.
To the one who has a runner.
Yeah.
Try and hold off on doing that as long as possible.
Yeah. Yeah. Try not to commit.
Make a better decision.
Yeah.
Like, the whole time that the defense is trying to make you commit, you're trying to not commit.
Yeah. Until you just put your head down and just go.
Yeah. And at some point, that's the trick is, right, you've got to just take off at some,
yeah,
point.
Yeah, for sure.
Pick your moment when they make a either a lob throw or get off
or
line.
They're spread out or yeah.
Or they're further spread out. Yeah. Or
yeah,
something.
Yeah.
And pick your moment and
yeah,
just take off.
Yep, it's true, man.
And slide hard.
At that point, just survival. It's just survival mode.
Yeah.
Like, nothing. I don't know. Yeah, just about trying to make it to the next bag. Either previous base or next base. Just be safe.
Yep. All right. Well, there's Chalk Talk.
Chalk Talk. All right, what we got today? What's our episode?
All right, so today we are looking at developing all the other positions. So we've talked about catchers, we've talked about pitchers. So we're going to try and touch on middle infield, corner infield, and outfield today.
Yep.
Let's see how far we get.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Where do you want to start?
Yeah, I mean, we could talk about kind of setting up more of the middle infielders. So okay. We can talk about getting them fine-tuned in practices and then trying to lock in on, towards the games. With middle infielders, or rather just infielders in general, I think the biggest thing is make sure that we're keying in on footwork, we're keying in on glove work, any kind of small group work, making sure that it's all about gloves and feet.
Yeah, so especially infielders trying to catch with your thumbs together.
When you're receiving a throw.
When you're receiving a throw. As a fielder throwing to that, if you are doing that underhand toss, like, let's make sure that that's sharp and quick,
mm-hmm.
And going on an upward trajectory towards, you know, the glove side shoulder of your middle infielder. We don't want, you know, rainbow throws. We don't want lollipops.
Yep.
It firm needs to but be soft. Firm, you know, shake their hand is the classic.
Yeah, for sure.
The classic instruction there of, you know, you throw that ball like you're reaching out to shake that fielder's hand.
Yeah.
If you're moving away from the base, or if you are having to charge that ball straight on, it's a short, quick, you know, moving your feet, opening up your feet, and doing almost like a sidearm, so like submarine mm-hmm. throw
yeah.
where the trajectory of the arm is also still moving upward mm-hmm. A little bit and trying to get that ball on that upward trajectory towards the glove with a nice, sharp, quick
yeah.
throw.
Yeah, and the great thing about that, too, is keeping the infielders in that posture, too. So if they're down in a fielding posture, like fielding a ground ball, it takes way too much wasted time for them to stand up and throw the ball. So for them to stay down in that posture, yep. where their chest is down, feel the ball, just get rid of it.
Yep. Yep. Go to a knee if you need to.
And for like younger kids or even, I mean, all the way up, like it's a hard throw to master. So it definitely takes practice. You know, not everyone's going to be able to master that under kind of like sidearm submarine throw. It definitely takes practice. Like there was a good amount of time where I'm a catcher, like my background's catching, and I just felt like trying to go from a catcher throw to a sidearm throw like that is actually pretty tough if you don't practice it.
Yeah.
You don't practice it.
One way to practice it is, and I haven't actually done this with my boys, but I've been meaning to, is, you know, the classic four corners drill
mm-hmm.
where
yeah.
you set up, lines at four different
forming
corners
a square.
Of the square.
Yeah.
And you just throw it around the square, either inside or to the outside. You can pull that square in closer and practice those.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one knee sidearm throws. After you catch it, you just go down and pretend like you're filling a ground ball and then move it
yeah.
around the square to the next person. So you can do it that way. That drill works for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
As well.
Yeah. Also just setting up your infielders on like on their throwing knee. So like a right knee, left foot, it's going kicked out to the side and just literally feeling the ball and throwing it from that angle. Feel the ball, throw the ball from that angle. So then they're just feeling their arm go, 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 go. You can also stand them on one foot, just like their throwing foot, and like tilt their body sideways and throw it that way. So they're almost like in a pendulum where their left leg's up off the ground. Which is a good way just to kind of feel the different arm angles. But yeah, middle infield, man, like they're known for their gloves and their feet. So we want to make sure that they remain athletic. So whatever drills you're working through, make sure that they're working either like a foot-based drill or a glove-based drill, or just get them as athletic as possible, whatever you're feeding them.
Do you teach them to step on that base and step backwards?
Like turning double plays?
Right, for turning double
plays. It depends on what timing they have with the ball. So if they beat the ball to the base, so if they get to the base before the ball comes, they'll hit the bag with their left foot and they'll actually come across it. They'll come across it and throw on the inside part of the baseline.
Now, is this the second base?
The second base. So second base. And then if they're on time with the ball, they'll just have their left foot on the base, field it, drop step onto their right foot, and then throw the ball. All timing. Shortstop is pretty much all the like similar tosses where you're just trying to move through the bag, kick the back corner with the right foot, turn their hips, and make the throw. Shortstop's not a whole lot of difference. Just, getting through, kicking the right foot through. That's kind of how I teach it. Yeah. Make sure that you're coming in. Yeah. Coming in with thumbs together. Make sure you give a good target when you're turning double plays.
I also think working forehands and backhands, short hops, is really good for middle infielders. And learning how to take an angle back on the ball as well. And spin your feet. If you're going to that backhand side, you're going to field it and plant that right foot and throw. But if you're going to your forehand side, like plant that right foot, spin around and throw.
Yeah.
And coming off the forehand. But it takes, especially younger players, it takes some time for them to understand that they have to kind of move backwards and take an angle towards that ball and not just go straight sideways.
Yeah, with hard hit balls and all that stuff, yeah. It's all about angles, man. It's all about angles and understanding. If you can create an angle to field the ball towards, like, first base or towards the base that you're trying to throw it to, you're going to be set for success. So if it's a hard hit ball, angle back, try to get to, like, either get around it or just cut it off.
One thing that I have been meaning to work on with my older boys that we just – for whatever reason, have not been able to get to yet. And at one of these points, I just need to stick it in my practice plan and say we're going to work on this, is how to hold that runner at second base. And I really want them to get to the point where they can work in and out. But we just haven't gotten to it. How do you teach that? How do you work on that timing?
Yeah, so runners on second base, how we coach our guys is having the batter in mind, whoever is the pull side player. So let's say, for instance, a right-handed batter is up to hit. My shortstop will kind of start the wheel. So meaning he'll be right in the base runner's back pocket, hitting his glove, moving his feet, making sure that the base runner's just kind of like locked in on the shortstop, making, jab steps to the base, trying to get him closer to the bag. And then as soon as the pitcher actually comes set, he'll actually wheel out, he'll vacate, he'll clear out and get to his spot. And that's when the second baseman will come in. He'll start kind of hitting his glove, moving towards the bag, because he'll be the opposite field player. So he'll work in. As soon as he recognizes the pitcher's going home, he's dead sprint back to his spot. Dead sprint back, making sure that he's ready for a ground ball, hit to him or line drive or whatever. And he's the last. So pull side player will be the one that starts the kind of working the base runner, and then the offside will be the one that'll finish it, if that makes sense.
Do you have a signal then from either of the middle infielders to the pitcher to say when to
not yet
make that pickoff?
We haven't got there yet. That's just something that we haven't had time to get to, but what I plan to do with them is creating, if we're trying to have the middle infielders call for a pick, I like calling it daylight, which means like you flash a glove as wide open as you can as they break to the bag. So like my shortstops, when he wants the ball to be picked, he'll make sure the pitcher looks at him, and then he'll flash his glove straight out towards the bag, and he'll make a dead sprint to the bag, and that's when the pitcher will turn and throw. Second baseman will hold out their hand straight out to the bag, just like an open hand, basically calling for the ball, not verbally, but like nonverbal sign. Yeah. And if the pitcher doesn't pick, either step off or make sure your fielder can get back to their position.
How many times do you want those middle infielders working in and out? Can they kind of just keep cycling?
They could. Typically, we'll just have the pull side start it, and then by the time the pitcher comes set, he'll be gone, and the second baseman will wheel in, and then he'll vacate. So really, just like one will be in, and then they'll vacate, and then the next one will come in. So it's not necessarily that, like back and forth. Yeah.
And then after that, we're either going to the plate or we're picking.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah. Absolutely. We do have catcher signs for pickoffs to show the pitcher that we want to pick off, and the pitcher just make sure that he doesn't air mail the middle infielder.
Yeah.
So throw it at him or throw it at the bag. Make sure it's not a bad throw.
That's yeah, a lot it. Of times the catcher has the best view of where that runner is and how far off he is.
Yeah.
And the catcher should always be paying attention to to how far off they are, because if you have an opportunity to backpick, like, take that opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. You can even get as deep as, you know, having the catchers call for timed pickoffs. We haven't done it. We haven't gotten there yet, but you can have the catcher give a target and then literally drop his glove down, just let his hand fall, and that's the timing of the pitcher picking off for like
we've
no look
picks. We've
been
working on that with our first and third play. Our number one, like our first and third play is just a step off the rubber and run at the runner at first.
Oh yeah.
And you know, turn your back intentionally to that third base
runner. Try to get him to lead off or something.
Trying to get him to bite a little bit.
Yeah.
And then you wheel around and see how far off he is and try and make that throw.
Oh man, yeah, I gotcha.
Do you actually throw that pick over to first base at all?
Are we talking about first and third?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll pick off multiple times, you know, in first and third if there's a speedy guy. But we'll just have typical, just the standard first and thirds where we're throwing through, have a middle infielder cut it off, or just throwing straight to third. That's usually all of our signs.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else on middle infielders in terms of ways to train them? We work a lot on our around the cones drill.
Okay.
Proper footwork for throwing that ground ball.
Yeah, going counterclockwise around it with your feet.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're working through the ball.
We want, 1-2 and a hop to prep step. Mm-hmm. We want, then you work around the cones to the right. You move your body to the right-hand side of the cones. I call them happy feet or whatever you want to call them.
Yeah, yeah, short, choppy feet.
Short, choppy feet. And then a right, left, nice big stride with the left foot slightly in front of the right.
Yep.
Toes up in the air still as you're fielding, so that as you are rocking forward onto your left foot toes, your right foot is moving behind. So that you can,
I call that the gas pedal. Your left foot is the gas pedal. Yeah. Get them through it, funnel it, make sure their elbows are out as they funnel it to their chest, and then again to get throwing position.
Couple of shuffle steps and then
For sure. I think also a big thing with the infielders is everyone on the field is communicators. They're all communicators, but the middle infielders are just a relay of the catcher. So make sure that we communicate cutoffs, relays, wherever the play is. You know, the catcher is always the general on the field, but once they call it, the middle infield is actually the closest to all positions. So they're the ones that are going to relay that sign. So whatever it is, whether the call is at 2-3, home, whatever, making sure that we're yelling. They're usually the majority of the cutoff guys, the relay guys, so they're always out, you know, calling for cuts. So making sure that they're very vocal on that.
Yeah.
Because there's so many fields that there's so much going on. Some of them are by freeways. Some of them have 10 games going on where kids are screaming. They can't hear anything in the outfield. So we got to make sure that our middle infielders are always talking.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. We've established, so we're on big boy fields now. So like 100% of the time we're on 60, 90 fields. So full baseball. Our middle infielders are working double cuts, which is, so you really have to get good at communicating on that. When a double cut, if you're not familiar with this, like a ball hits the biggest part of the field, both the shortstop and the second baseman are hustling out to line up to relay to a bag. So meaning like
either third or home.
Usually third or home. The first guy is the main primary cut. The second guy is about like 10 feet behind him. If there's a bad throw or a throw at his feet or whatever, he's there for the relay. So he's there for the bad throws that he could relay and get to the third base or home. And then first base will back up. He'll trail the runner second base. But biggest thing is communicating.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
All right. You want to talk corner infielders?
Let's do it.
I feel like first base, there's a lot to learn. There's a lot to learn over there. Learning how to pick a ball is first off, especially for younger players, it takes guts. Like, you have to stick your nose there.
Yeah.
Like, you got to get your eyes behind your glove. You have to be willing to get low.
Yes.
And you can't be afraid to take one off the chest or off the ankle or what, you know.
Yes, yes.
Forearm, whatever it is.
Yeah, but it's better than the face. If your nose is behind your glove, like, yeah, you may get hit in the face from time to time, but, like, you're probably going to be pretty safe,
yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah.
It's the ones that you kind of flinch, you kind of let your eyes kind of pull away from your glove. That's when you get smoked in the nose or, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah. The thing that I've noticed is that the toughest instinct to teach is getting that glove all the way down on the ground and not anticipating that hop is going to be bigger than it is. It's so much easier to work from the ground up than to try and follow that ball from top down.
Yes, absolutely. And that's like the key term that you hear so much is we're ground up. And that goes for fielding. That goes for any fielding ground balls, whatever, throwdowns. But for first base picks, you have to make sure that you're working underneath the ball all the time. So no matter what, you're trying to catch the ball and part of the ball. Because, I mean, every throw across the diamond, there's going to be pretty much a downward trajectory. So we got to make sure we get underneath the ball.
Yeah. The mistake that I see a lot of young players making more often than not is tracking the ball with their eyes and the glove at the same time, and they just follow that trajectory of the ball.
Oh, down, my gosh.
Downward.
Where they stand now, like, they already have the glove extended, and the ball, yeah, then the right. glove drops. Oh, yeah. My gosh.
So it's like, no, we want to work up, not yeah. down.
And yeah.
It's just, yeah, it's a tough instinct to
Absolutely.
Learn.
I like all my first basemen when they're receiving a ball is make sure both their feet are on the bag. So I like having them, like, kind of straddle the bag with their heels, and then right foot steps, but their palms are always up outside of them when they're waiting for the throw. So their palms are up, ready to go. And then they get their right foot on the bag, wherever whichever part of the bag. And then left foot goes to the ball. But making sure that our palms are always up, because that's a good position to where the majority of the time your hands are going to be underneath the throw regardless. But
so
if you, as soon as you take a stride,
again, so having the palm,
having your palms out by almost like out by your waist, like
a gunslinger,
almost like, yeah, like palms up, like, you know, out, just out in front of you, expecting the ball. And as that ball's coming in, now you know what to do with your hands. Like, they're already set. They're ready to go.
Yeah.
So they're not just like doing whatever, they're set. So now you could either just turn your glove over, pick a ball, turn the glove over, catch it, whatever. But it's just like a good athletic receiving position.
Nice. Okay. One thing, during our warmups, every practice, every game, we work on short hops. Everybody yeah. does. So that's the first thing we do every practice and game for our warmups is, yeah. you know, get your partner, get your gloves, get a ball, start with the glove on the ground, and throw that short hop to your partner and work on ground up.
Yeah, absolutely.
It takes a lot of repetition.
Yes, it does.
To do that.
Absolutely. And then you can start progressing it from, so like, I don't know how you teach it, but like starting on two knees, short hop drills, then you go to your feet, go to, or short hop drills, all that stuff.
We start on our feet.
Sweet.
So,
and also well, depends on your time.
Yeah.
Yeah. How much time you want to spend on it.
Yeah. We'll start on our feet and we'll start with balls straight on. And then we work forehands. And so you work on opening up your feet and open up your hips, and then we'll work backhands. So
yeah,
we
absolutely.
Do 10 or 12, you know, a dozen or so.
Yeah.
At each.
Do you usually spot. Do that after play catch? So play catch and do that?
Or
do
no, you start we'll do right that away? First. We'll,
oh, okay. We'll, do that before
we'll start,
play catch?
We'll do that.
Nice.
Yeah. We'll start that, and then we'll do one knee throws and then twist and
tees
and rockers and, and go from there.
Gotcha. Very nice. Very nice. Everyone's got their warm up routine, but that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's every single practice.
And, you know, you start to see the improvement too, especially like players that are newer maybe to your team who haven't done that a lot. You start to see them being able to pick those balls a whole lot more. And it's also easier to say, hey, look, when that ball is coming in, we can't, it's just like when we start practice, you can't follow the glove or follow the ball with your glove. You've got to start with the glove on the ground and work up. Like, that's why we start every practice that way, so we can develop those instincts.
Yeah, absolutely. Instincts, and then just making sure that you're comfortable with your glove. So building confidence, all that stuff. It's just like anything, just like hitting. You take so many reps on hitting because you need to master it. But same with short hops. You have to make sure that you're working in short hops.
Yeah.
because it really allows you to really trust your glove, trust your instinct, and also just kind of build that kind of like just subconscious to where, like, if a hard hit ball gets hit at you, you trust yourself. You just have the instinct, that reactive instinct.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
Yeah. Third base. Do you have anything to add on the third base? How's it different from first base?
Well, you know, you're not holding runners on quite as much. And I want my third baseman, even with the bag, to start most at bats.
Sure.
Until we get to two outs, probably. I want them even with the bag, or maybe even a step in front. Again, making sure we're doing our prep steps of 1-2 and a hop as the ball crosses the plate.
Yep.
The one thing that we do with our infield routine for both of my teams is we do a lot of throwing across the diamond from first to third. So in our infield routine, we start with around the horn, and then we move to getting the out at one. And so I'll hit ground balls to each position. But then when it's first baseman's turn, I'll hit them a ball, and they step on the bag and throw it all the way over to third.
Absolutely.
And just to get them used to throwing that distance and making sure that if there's a runner on second and a ground ball to first, or if there's a runner on first and a ground ball to first base, like, and we can't get them out at second, then making sure that we're guarding against that runner.
Yeah, absolutely.
Either taking off for home or whatever. Or if they get a big, huge lead, have rounded third really hard, and we can catch them real quick.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just, staying used to making that throw and making that catch.
Yeah.
Because that's a long throw and catch.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, sometimes practices get in the kind of the routine of like, hey, everyone's just going to, you know, throw the ball to first. We're just going to do singles, and then we're going to turn double plays. But then, like, the third baseman rarely gets balls thrown to them to lay tags. So make sure when you're playing your practices, make sure that your third baseman's, you know, on the bag. Make sure that they're laying a tag properly, making sure that they set up and they're being able to receive that throw properly. Third basemans, they got to be dogs. Like, if there's throws, if there's any plays that happen at third, they have to be sure that they're able to either make the tag or stop the ball from getting by them. Because very common, that's the spot where, like, so many backup issues happen to where the pitcher's not quite there or the left fielder's not quite there. The ball tends to scoot into down the left field line. And that run, it's just an easy run.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many times where that throw's coming in and the pitcher just turns into a spectator. Is not backing up or anything like that. And it's just like, oh my gosh, my third baseman's got to be a dog. They have to make sure that they body things up, that they wear it. Doesn't matter how bad it hurts. They have to be that last lifeline.
Yeah. You've got to go get off the bag and go make that catch.
Yeah.
Or absolutely. Whatever it takes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now with ground balls, I like training them, like, even with the bag or even a little bit ahead of the bag, like a little bit more, you know, in on the baseline.
Yeah.
Especially when they're taking ground balls. Because we need to build the reactive instincts. Third base is normally known as the hot corner because there's a majority of right-handed hitters, and that ball gets to third base very fast.
And I tell all of my third basemen, I want you going after every ball that's hit towards the shortstop.
Yes.
I want you not taking an angle, but going hard towards, like, straight towards second base. And trying to get to that ball before the shortstop does. Because if you can, that's much more likely to get an out than if it's between y'all and you let it go through, that shortstop deep in the hole, that's going to be a much closer or tougher play to make.
Yeah, and that's where the whole communication comes into play too. When the shortstop has a better angle, you know, he can call him off. But, yeah, third base, cut it off. Also, third base is usually the longest throw, one of the longer throws. So make sure that they, like, in two outs, I usually make them play their best range, meaning they'll play as deep as they possibly can, that they can still make the out at first. So make sure that they're making those long throws during practices, that they're comfortable with those long throws, and they're able to just throw a dart across the infield.
Yeah.
So again, comfortable with those throws. But yeah, again, third basemans, even with first base, like, we have to make sure that we're just absolute dogs. Like, we have to be strong, we have to be mentally present for every throw, and that we're not afraid of the ball. We're not afraid to body it up. We're not afraid to just completely stop that ball from getting by us.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's why catchers make great third basemen, because they're so used to the ball coming at them. They're not afraid. So if you're ever struggling to find a third baseman, throw a catcher there, and they'll make sure that ball stays in front
of them. I've actually done that with both of my teams recently.
Yeah.
I was really wanting to work in a third catcher for my younger team.
Yeah.
Just to have another option, because both of my other catchers are also pretty decent pitchers.
Nice.
So anytime I want one of them pitching, I don't want them catching at least the same game, preferably same day. But, so I was trying to work in a third catcher, and I took one of my catchers and put him at third for our last game, and he caught a line drive. He made a couple of good plays. I was like, okay.
Yeah. All right. Absolutely.
I was like, I wasn't sure what was going to happen over there, but like, with very little experience, went over there and did great.
Yeah. I mean, third basemen, they don't necessarily have to have a huge amount of range. You know, range does help, but normally they just have to make sure that they stay in front of the ball.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. Just make sure they have a good glove and that they stay in front of the ball.
Same for my older team too. One of my better catchers, I want to get him more pitching experience, and so I've been trying him at third as well, and he's been doing great there.
Yeah, absolutely. Because catchers have good hands. They're not afraid of the ball. It's a good, sometimes it's a good way just to get them a secondary position if your catchers don't have one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good deal. All right. You want to talk outfielders?
Let's do it. Let's talk about outfielders.
Man, I think the hardest thing to do on a field is catch the long ball over your head, especially if it's right at you.
Yes, the one that keeps carrying.
Yeah,
you're talking about.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I think
that's one of the hardest plays to make in
the one
baseball.
Straight over your head. Yes, yeah. I know. That's one thing. I've started kind of getting my outfielders into more of like a confined drill where we actually. So we'll usually start our outfielders like this. Usually we do a lot of pregame stuff with this. So we'll throw like football passes, meaning like I'll have them run like almost like a big post, but I'll throw lob baseballs, teaching them to get behind the ball and work back. But I started implementing straight over their heads. So they'll turn to they're open their right hips. They'll run straight back, and then I'll actually throw it over the opposite side. And as they're running and they're looking back over their left shoulder, they have to instinctively turn their head opposite and look back over their right shoulder to catch the ball, and getting comfortable of like taking their eyes off the ball for a split second and going, because it keeps their momentum.
Oh, that's good.
It keeps their momentum.
Like, yeah.
Because if they stop, so let's say they're running, towards the outfield fence and they're looking over their left shoulder, you don't want to turn left and do a full spin, face the infield and spin over and face the opposite way, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because they could trip or they just lose their steam. They lose their speed.
Yeah.
So I like calling them, I think they're called half moons, or at least that's what I call them, but like a half moon, kind of like turn your head from your left side to your right side or vice versa.
I like that.
Over the head, over the head catches are so difficult to make. But if you can kind of create an angle to get behind it, but also get kind of an angle, like you're going to be able to have a decent read on the ball.
Especially for younger players, teaching that drop step and like opening up your hips and getting back behind the ball is it's so difficult, and you just have to keep working on it and keep working on it. Because what they all want to do with that ball hit right at them is run in.
Just run in, and then they start backpedaling.
And then they realize, oh crap, it's over my head.
And then they backpedal, and then they trip, or they don't have a good angle on it.
Yeah, it's tough. The other drill I like is similar to what you're talking about. I set up three cones in the outfield.
Yeah.
Like very spread quite a bit apart. Like one in shallow left, one in shallow center, and one in like deep left center.
Mm-hmm.
And you go from one cone to the next, one, two, and three.
Okay.
And the player in shallow left takes off towards that cone in left center.
Yeah, so
and
deep.
You're throwing it over their shoulder, and they're trying to get back behind the ball and catch it. Like learning to take that angle back on the ball. The one in deep center is in front of them, and so they learn how to read that ball that's coming in front of them. And then the other one, they're again moving from shallow center towards left center, taking off in a sprint and throwing it over their head.
Yeah.
and we just
cycle. And you can reverse it.
Yeah, and we just cycle through. And you can reverse it too.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's really just about trying to figure out, reading the ball, make sure that they're taking good angles. Biggest thing with outfielders is make sure that they just automatically have a first step back. So no matter whenever – so we're talking about fly balls. So whenever that ball's hit up, our initial instinct has to be a foot open. We have to make sure that our first step is always 1 foot back, because balls hit to the outfield sometimes have more backspin than we realize, and backspin actually allows the ball to actually carry further. The physics on it, that ball just wants to carry more, and there's times where we'll take 2 steps in and realize that the ball's 5 feet overhead.
Yeah. If you're teaching at like the 5 or 6 U level, the best way to teach it is to line all the boys up without their gloves, and you just start with a ball in your hand, and you tell them your first step is back. You know, teach them that language.
Sure.
Take a drop step. And then I hold the ball out to my right and then to my left. I'm like, if the ball is on this side of your body, you're opening up your hips this way. If it's on that side of your body, you're opening up hips that way. And so we'll just do that a few times and just have them practice taking that drop step.
Yeah.
And then you can, with either a tennis ball or regular baseball, you just toss the ball over one of their shoulders from a very close range, so like, you know, 3-4 feet away.
Yeah.
And all they're doing is just taking that one step back, that drop step, and catching it just over their shoulder. And then you progress to the next step, which is you go ahead and put the gloves on, and now you step, you know, 5-10 feet away and throw that ball over their shoulder where they're having to take, you know, 2-4 steps to go get it.
Yeah.
But they're still learning that instinct of the drop step and running to the baseball.
Yes.
And we don't run with our gloves out. We
tuck that glove in, run in a normal
sprint to the spot, get under the ball.
Gosh, that's the hardest habit to get rid of.
Yes.
Is running with their gloves straight out.
Yeah.
Like, come here, ball. Meanwhile, you're running with your glove over your head. You know, like, you're not going to run fast.
Yeah.
Just tuck your glove and run.
So if you're teaching younger kids, and sometimes even older kids, like if they're not getting the whole drop step concept, and opening up your body to one side or the other, like that's your first movement, break it all the way back down, and go start simple.
Yeah. And this is all, again, repetition, because we got to make sure that when it comes game time, we don't have time to think. We want to make sure that it's just second nature, that when that ball gets hit in the air, our first step has to be back. Me as a coach, and I hope the majority of coaches are like this, I would much rather have the ball fall in front of the outfielder than over the outfielder's head.
Same.
If that ball falls in front of them, the base runner is just getting a single. If the ball gets over your head, it's probably going to be a double. It's going to be extra bases.
Yep.
So making sure that they are consistently working behind the ball, that they get a good read on it. The drop step, if you don't have a good read on it, drop step and then pause and read it. Just pause, see where the ball is going, and then go get it.
And as you move up in level, like learning to get behind that ball and stay behind that ball until you're ready to catch it, so that you are moving your feet towards the infield as you're catching the ball. So when that is helpful is if you've got a runner at second trying to tag up, or a runner at third trying to tag up and run home.
Yes.
You hit that fly ball that's in front of them, tell them to stay behind it and catch it as they're running forward towards the infield, and just make a running throw all in one smooth motion all the way home.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And if there's no runners on, make sure that they settle their feet down if they're able to. Meaning, as soon as they recognize they're underneath the ball or behind it, settle your feet down so your eyes aren't bouncing, so your glove's not bouncing. Slow down, catch the ball.
Yeah.
Because there's just so many times that people come, they find the baseball, they find a fly ball, and they start running, and they're just like pounding their feet and their eyes are bouncing, and the next thing you know, they don't even touch the ball.
Yeah.
You know, it falls right next to them, you know?
Right.
Just try to slow your body down, make sure your eyes aren't bouncing, catch the ball and make the play.
Yeah. So in the outfield, let's talk about communication. We've been talking about communication a lot today. Who has priority?
Man, center fielder the whole way. Yeah. Center fielder the whole way. I've been trying to get on my guys about starting to communicate for the person that's going to make the play.
And do you have your center fielder stay behind your other outfielders? Like, you want your center fielder being the backup to the others, or do you – how do you teach that?
Well, they're all going to be playing based on the hitter, so how they line up. But for the center fielders, I mean, they always have priority. But, I mean, it's probably just depending on where the ball gets placed. Right, so they're right. going to go – if they can make the ball – make the play, they're going to make the play. And then either left fielder or right fielder will funnel back to be the backup. Or if the left fielder is going to get the ball. But they have to communicate. So if there's a ball in the gap, they have to be like, I got it, blah, blah, blah. Or, you know.
But I guess what I'm saying is I think I want my left fielder trying to take an inside track to the ball, and I would want my center fielder taking the outside track and
I can see that. At the end of the day, like, whoever's going to make the play makes the play.
Right,
yeah. But center fielder, they have priority the whole way. They're calling off left fielders, right fielders, shortstops, second base. They rule the world.
And outfielders have priority over infielders.
Yes, absolutely.
So if that ball is in between, it's, you know, one of those Texas leaguers, and it's in between the outfield and the infield, the outfield calls off the infield, yep. not the other way around.
Absolutely. And this is, again, where communication happens. There was a couple seasons ago, man, I hated hearing this, but one of our teams, again, communication, second baseman, there's one of those like in-betweeners, second baseman puts his head down, it's over his head, so he turns and runs. But, I mean, he's looking back at the ball, full dead sprint, and the right fielder's coming in on the play, doesn't communicate, doesn't call him off, they both collide, second baseman tears his ACL, out for the season.
Oh, that's brutal.
So the biggest key is making sure that you communicate. Yeah. Outfielders always have the right of way, but you have to communicate. You have to call them off. You have to make sure you're safe. They have the best view. They have the best view in the house. So make sure that you communicate.
Yep, for sure.
Yeah,
for
the key, like I've been really working with my team on, is making sure that the outfielders that are not making the play is, you know, telling the other guys to either that the ball's back or ball is in, or if there's a fence, you know, if they're running back on the, you know, deeper in the field, make sure they tell them they got room, or if there's a fence, so your fellow teammate doesn't smack into a fence. Biggest thing is just making sure that you're helping your teammates out.
Yeah. Good deal. All right.
Yeah. There's your outfielders. I mean, catchers are the generals on the field. They're making all calls. Shortstops are going to be a relay of that call, and then center field will be the relay of it again. So there's your three. They're all right down the middle of the field. They're all the leaders. They're all the communicators. And with that, I mean, it goes back to that building block. You know, they're all cooperating.
Cooperation.
They're all cooperating. They're all working towards the same goal. It's not what I could do. It's not what I want. It's what the team has to have.
Yeah.
Right? So they're all cooperating on the field.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. I think that pretty much is a wrap right there. Like,
absolutely.
A lot of great info.
Absolutely.
Today.
I'm going to touch on one thing, though. I know we talked lot about pitchers. We didn't talk about pitcher just yet in terms of, like, the actual team dynamic. Pitchers, as soon as you pitch the ball, make sure that you are not a spectator.
Yes.
So your key with when there's – so I'm talking about games. Whenever there's a play on the field, making sure that you are – you are the backup. Like,
yep.
Like, if there's a play at second base, you should be right behind the mound being a secondary backup. Plays at third base, you should be there. If there's a play at home, you should be back on the backstop. Make sure you're not a spectator.
Absolutely. Cool.
Yeah, I think that nailed it down, man. We'll see you on the next one.
All right. Peace out.